So the last time we were together, we concluded the story of Noah, and we saw that the three sons of Noah were Ham, Shem, and Japheth. And do you remember which one Abraham descended from, of the three?
Shem.
That's right. He was descended from Shem. We find that genealogy in Genesis chapter 11. We looked at that a little bit just to introduce that Abraham was on his way here. And we've seen that Terah was one of those descendants of Shem. And he had three sons, Abraham, Nahor, and Haran. Or he might have had more sons. He likely did. But they often just give the ones that are pertinent to the genealogy that you're looking at. Because you know how a tree branches out. It goes farther and farther. Well, they're following certain lines. And that's why you don't have every line and every person that's ever been born. Or it would take a little bit bigger book than the Bible in order to do that. And so we see the genealogy of Terah in 11:27. Terah had Abraham, Nahor, and Haran, and Haran had Lot. And Lot would have been then Abraham's nephew, right? Mm-hmm. And Haran died before his father Terah in his native land in Ur of the Chaldees. So Haran died young, in other words, and that meant Lot was without a father. And then you'll see that what happens a little bit later on, Abraham sort of takes him. And Abraham and Nahor took wives. The name of Abraham's wife was Sarai, and the name of Nahor's wife was Milcah, the daughter of Haran, the father of Milcah, and the father of Ishka. So I know this may sound a little bit boring, but it is setting the stage that God was going to pick out a person to begin that line for Jesus Christ to come in and to reveal himself to the world. We found that there was only spots here and there where we see where the presence of the Lord seemed to become important to people. We found from Adam and Eve that there was a departure, and then Enoch walked with God. Men began to call on the name of the Lord. Remember that? A long time ago. Then Enoch was translated. Then we come to Noah, and there's generations that are passing by here. We come to Noah. And we find that Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord, and the great flood happens. And then we see wickedness again taking place. And that wickedness taking place so that to the point where they go out and they try to build a tower to the heavens. And God confounds them. And that's where we left off after the Tower of Babel. And we follow these generations now down to a place called Ur of the Chaldees. And then in Genesis 11:30, it says, Sarah was barren and she had no child. And Terah took his son Abraham and his grandson Lot, the son of Haran, and his daughter-in-law Sarah, his sons Abraham's wife, and they went out with them from Ur of the Chaldees to go to the land of Canaan. And they came to Haran and dwelt there. And the days of Terah were 205 years, and Terah died in Haran. Now when you read this, it sounds like Terah made this decision. But at this point, what we find is if you go, Marie, if you'll go to Acts chapter 7, verse 1, you're going to get a clearer picture as to what really happened here as Stephen speaks a prophecy in the New Testament about this very story. We're going to look at the life of Abraham. We're going to see that Abraham was a man of faith, but we'll also see that Abraham was a man of failure. Does that keep on ringing?
Oh,
is this the last dinging? Is it okay? Yeah. So he was a man of faith, but he was also a man of failure. You know, the Bible doesn't cover over men's sin. Remember Noah? What did he go and do? Planted a vineyard and got... He got drunk, right? Yeah. The Bible doesn't cover over. It says things the way they were. And when we look at the life of Abraham, we're going to see a remarkable man of faith, but you're also going to see some failure there too in him. And that he wasn't always so quick to do everything what God wanted him to do. You see, in Acts 7:1, it says, 7:2, this is Stephen speaking under the power of the Spirit of God just before they stoned him to death. Brothers and fathers, listen, the God of glory appeared to our father Abraham when he was in Mesopotamia before he dwelt in Haran. And he said to him, get out of your country and from your relatives and come to a land that I will show you. And so he came out of the land of the Chaldeans and dwelt in Haran. And from there, when his father was dead, he moved him to this land in which you now dwell. So, first off, God appeared when he was living in Mesopotamia, which is Ur of the Chaldees. And in the country of Ur, God spoke to Abraham there before he ever dwelt in the city of Haran. And he said, he gave him command to do two things. What were they?
Leave your relatives.
Okay, leave your relatives.
Get out of the country.
And leave your country. And then and come to the land that I will show you. So he gave him really three instructions, but the first two, leave your country and leave your relatives and come to the land that I will show you. So he's over here in Mesopotamia, in Ur of the Chaldees, and he says, now I want you to go to the land that I will show you. And what was that land? What's it called? The land of?
Canaan.
Canaan, right. It was called the land of Canaan. So God gave Abraham instructions, and he called him out of the land of the Chaldees, and he called him to go from Ur of the Chaldees all the way to Canaan. Now, how far did Abraham go at first?
Went halfway.
He went halfway. He went to Haran.
Yeah.
That split on you, did it, Marie? That screen, you might have to exit and come back in. He went to Haran, which was part way. But we find out why, because it tells us back in Genesis, it tells us that Terah took his sons Abraham at 11:31. Yeah, Marie, exit out and come back in. Or I don't know why it splits sometimes, and I don't know how to undo that. But it, there you go. Okay, Genesis 11:31. It's Terah that took his sons and Abraham's grandsons, Lot the son of Haran, his daughter-in-law Sarah, his sons, Abraham's wife, and they went out from Ur of the Chaldees. Remember, it was God had called Abraham, right? But his father, Terah, went. And who else went? In 11:31?
Lot.
Lot, his grandson, right? And they left Ur of the Chaldees to go to the land of Canaan, but what happened? They came to Haran and they stayed there. They dwelt there. And how long did they dwell there? Why did they stay? When did they finally leave there?
After his father died.
That's right. So what had God told Abraham to do? Leave your country and leave your
relatives.
What had Abraham done?
Took his father
and he took his nephew and he only went halfway. So even though Abraham was a great man of faith, and remember now, at this point it seems the Ur of the Chaldees was actually a city that has been discovered, and they found actually cuneiform tablets in that place of Ur of the Chaldees. Years went by, and especially people who said there's no such place, but they found the place, and it was a pagan culture. It was not a God-fearing culture. It was not a culture that served the Lord. So Abraham would have been a product of that culture. And it doesn't tell us that God called Abraham because he was righteous, because he was good, because he was holy, because God chose Abraham. God was gracious and called him. But Abraham was a learner, and he didn't obey God perfectly. It seems as if Terah decided he would settle in Haran, and it's very likely that the city of Haran was probably founded by his own son, because it's the name of his own son, right? And maybe he had sentimental values. Says, look, we're going to go where Haran was, and we're going to settle here. Why should we go all the way to the land of Canaan? Whatever the reasons, it wasn't until Terah died that Abraham finished the journey. So we don't really know how long there was between the time of the call of Abraham to the time when he finally left, how long they settled in Haran in that journey. But maybe I can show you on this one here. I have a little map.
Where's it at?
No, you won't have it there. I don't have it there. I have to show it here, F5. There's a map here. You can see it. Here's Ur of the Chaldees. It's down in the Gulf of Suez here. See the Persian Gulf?
That's
Persian Gulf here, I mean.
What was there? What's there now?
That's down towards Babylon. down towards Iraq. It'd be down in that area, down in
Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, it'd be around in that area there. And so that's where Ur of the Chaldees was. And it's a fair journey in those days to come all the way up here. And there's where Haran is up here, right? And here's where the land of Canaan is. So it was about a halfway journey, as Arch had said. And so this is as far as they went. And they settled there until Abraham's father died. And then when Abraham's father died, finally Abraham finished his journey and landed here in the land of Canaan.
Why did it cut across? Is it desert across? Yes,
this is a very barren desert across here. Very barren. This would be you can see the water here. Mm-hmm. See the river?
Yeah.
This would be the trade routes that were. Mm-hmm. This would be mountainous through here and very desert-like. Yeah. Yeah. So.
It's a lot longer, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, the shortest distance is between 2 points, straight line, isn't it? Yeah. So what's interesting is that God spoke to Abraham in Ur of the Chaldees. Abraham obeyed God partially and went part way. But I want to let you know something, that God is so faithful that when he calls you, he doesn't give up on you. It's a good thing, isn't it? He could have said, Abraham, you blew it. You didn't do what I told you. But eventually, what did Abraham have to lose in the process? His father. He lost his father in the process. We don't know. Maybe his father would have lived a lot longer if he had stayed where he was. But he told him, take him. So he told him not to take his family. And yet, that's what Abraham did. But he still had Lot with him at this point. So we go to Genesis 12, 1. And we see the call that God had given to Abraham. And after Terah died, look what it says in Genesis 12:1. The Lord said to Abraham, get out of your country, from your family, from your father's house, to a land that I will show you. I'll make you a great nation. I'll bless you and make your name great, and you shall be a blessing. And I will bless those who bless you. I will curse him who curses you, and in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. So Abraham departed as the Lord had spoken to him, and Lot went with him. So he still wasn't getting in the message, right? But anyway, he was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. And he took Sarah his wife and Lot his brother's son and all their possessions that they had gathered and the people whom they had acquired in Haran and departed to go to the land of Canaan. And so they came to the land of Canaan. And Abraham passed through the land to the place of Shechem as far as the terebinth tree of Morah, and the Canaanites were then in the land. Then the Lord appeared to Abraham and said, to your descendants I will give this land. And there he built an altar to the Lord who had appeared to him. And so we have the record here of worship. And that is, they built an altar of worship to the Lord. They would have just put stones together and made sacrifice, because that's what we found right from the very beginning, that God was looking for sacrifice. And that's what Abraham would have done. And he moved from there to the mountain east of Bethel. And he pitched his tent with Bethel on the west and Ai in the east. And Ai, if I remember rightly, is Hebrew for destruction or disarray. And Bethel means the house of God. And so he pitched his tent there with Bethel on the west and Ai in the east. He had come from Ur. He had come from the east. And he had gone to the west. And there he pitched his tent toward Bethel, and he built an altar to the Lord and called on the name of the Lord. So we see the response of Abraham. First, he builds an altar to the Lord. Secondly, he calls on the name of the Lord. So he becomes a man of worship. He becomes a man who seeks the Lord. And this is a similar statement that was given, remember, at the time of Enoch, men began to call on the name of the Lord. They began to look to God. And that's what Abraham did. So he comes to the land that God had called him to. Took him longer than it should have. He still had Lot with him. A problem comes. So he has this promise from God. And the promise is great. And all of a sudden, a problem springs up. And often problems can cause us to do what?
Make wrong decisions.
What's that?
Make wrong choices.
Make wrong choices and to doubt.
Yeah.
They cause us to doubt. I mean, that's a huge move for Abraham to make, to go all the way there. Finally, he gets to this land that's been promised to him, and he's going to make it. God's promised him this land, And, you know, it's his and it's going to be wonderful. And all of a sudden it tells us in Genesis 12:10 what happened. There's a famine in the land. And so what does Abraham do as soon as the famine comes? Because what do people usually do when there's a famine in one place?
Move
to another place. But what had God told him to do?
Stay there.
Go there. This was the place he was supposed to go to. And so we see, even though Abraham was a man of faith and that he responded with maybe not such great swelling faith, right? In the fact that, you know, he didn't do everything that he was told. He did get to the land of Canaan. And when he gets there, what does he do? He leaves it because there's trouble.
Now, because nomadic, though?
They would have been nomadic people. It would have been the normal thing to do. But it wasn't the normal thing to do to go to as far as they did, away into a country that they didn't know where it was at all. That wasn't a normal situation. And if we go to, perhaps we go to Hebrews chapter 11, verse 8 for a second and see what it says in these passages. And when we see, I'm looking for Abraham here. There's a quote here I wanted to read. I don't have it there. Yeah, in Hebrews chapter 11, it says, by faith Abraham, so we go back to the New Testament, right? And we see that the New Testament reveals some things. By faith Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to the place which he would receive as an inheritance. And he went out, not knowing where he was going. By faith he dwelt in the land of promise as in a foreign country, dwelling in tents, as nomadic, as Marie said, with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. We'll look at some of these later. For he waited for the city which has foundations, whose builder and maker is God. And then it goes on to speak of more by faith. Sarah also received strength to conceive seed. And so we see that this was a call. He was called, going out by faith, really not knowing where he was going. He'd never been that way before. Some of them probably had been to Haran. It's obvious it would seem that way, but not to this land of Canaan. But by faith, Abraham walked out. And in going to a place where he didn't know where it was, and expecting the promises of God to be there for him, and landing with a famine in front of him. Have you ever felt discouraged? Have you ever found that, boy, it doesn't quite seem to be working out as those promises seem to read? Has that ever happened to you?
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever found yourself chafing at the bit and wondering, why isn't God doing what I expected him to do? I've been there. Lots of times I've been there. But what was the result? In Abraham's waiting and looking, what did he do? Did he stay there? No. It tells us what he did. There was famine in the land, back to Genesis 12:10. And Abraham went down to Egypt to dwell there, for famine was severe in the land. And if you saw on the map there, Egypt was down this way, further down, right? So he takes a trip down to Egypt, because the famine was severe in the land. It seemed like the logical thing to do. But he gets to Egypt, and what does he find in Egypt? Trouble. But it says, it came to pass when he was close to entering Egypt, he said to Sarah, his wife, indeed, I know you are a woman of beautiful countenance. Isn't it nice when a husband says that about his wife? In other words, you're a beautiful woman, Sarah. Therefore, it will happen, when the Egyptians see you, they'll say, this is his wife. And they'll kill me, but they'll let you live. In other words, you're so beautiful that when the Egyptians see you, they're going to kill me to get you. So, please say you are my sister, so it may be well with me for your sake, and I may live because of you. So not only does Abraham leave the land of Canaan that was promised, but goes down to Egypt, which wasn't promised. What does he do even just on his way in?
Right.
He sets up a lie. That's right. Now, in truth, Sarah was his sister. She was actually his half-sister. In Genesis 20:11, the same thing happened with another guy named Abimelech. And he did the same thing. Abraham said, because I thought surely the fear of God is not in this place, and they will kill me on account of my wife. But indeed she is truly my sister, says Abraham speaking later on. She is the daughter of my father, but not the daughter of my mother. Okay? And she became my wife.
He does it twice.
He does it later on with a man named Abimelech, another king. But, Sarah was his half-sister. Now, before you get all grossed out, remember, we started with perfection at Adam and Eve. We're still, not that far down the line, that there was no forbidding of marrying your sister or your half-sister or whatever, because the purity was still there. There was still, the gene pool was still solid. Whereas we said now that if you tried to do that, you'd have a mess on your hands. Indeed, by the time of Moses, we have the law coming in and forbidding those kinds of relations. Not that anybody, well, certainly we wouldn't be interested in them at this point anyway today. But that's where Abraham did. It was a convenient lie, shall we say? It's one of those half-truths, you know? That's right. Yeah. And so they go down there. He says, say you're my sister. And so it was when Abraham came into Egypt, the Egyptians saw the woman, that she was very beautiful. The princes of Pharaoh also saw her and recommended her to Pharaoh. And the woman was taken to Pharaoh's house. And he treated Abraham well for her sake. He had sheep and oxen and male donkeys, male and female servants, female donkeys and camels. But what happened?
He got upset because Abraham said...
First, what happened? The Lord plagued Pharaoh and his house with great plagues because of Sarah, Abraham's wife. And Pharaoh called Abraham and said, what is this you've done to me? Why did you not tell me that she was your wife? Why did you say she's my sister? I might have taken her as my wife. Now, therefore, here is your wife. Take her and go your way. So Pharaoh commanded his men concerning him, and they sent him away, and his wife, and all that he had. And so we can see that Abraham was a man of faith, but also a man of failure. Now, I don't know about you, but that kind of encourages me some. Because sometimes I'm a man of faith, but often I'm a man of failure.
Just a man.
That's right. Yeah. And sometimes, you know, we haven't quite done everything the way we should. But thank God that it is God's power that keeps us. It's God that persists. It's God that holds on to us. It's God that pulls us through. And God has a plan for each of your lives. And in spite of your failure, he'll get you where he wants you to go. It's good to know. If you belong to the Lord, he doesn't let go. He doesn't stop. He's very patient. Waited until Terah died. Then he brought him into the land. And so finally in Genesis 13:1 says, Abraham went up from Egypt, he and his wife and all he had, and Lot with him to the south. So he comes back up out of Egypt. But you know what he took out of Egypt? He took a slave woman. Her name was Hagar. Mm-hmm. And you know what happens later on? Mm-hmm. Trouble in the household. And so his journey to Egypt, he brought something back with him, all right. Now, he probably brought some riches back with him, because he was very rich, it says. But he also brought back Hagar, and we're going to find out about Hagar a little bit later on. Failure always produces its consequences. While God brings about his plan in spite of our failures, and in spite of the rabbit trails that we take, you ever go in the woods and see where rabbits travel, they don't take a straight line, right? And that's what we're like. We're on the rabbit trail. God's got the straight trail, and we run the rabbit trail. But there's consequences for our actions when we run on the rabbit trails, when we aren't quick and prompt to obey God. There's lost time, and there's often consequences that come from it. So Abraham gets back up to Canaan. Abraham went up from Egypt. And as he went, he still has Lot with him. So we find, where does Abraham go back to? He went on his journey from the south as far as Bethel, which is called the house of God, that's what the name Bethel means, to the place where his tent had been at the beginning between Bethel and Ai, to the place of the altar which he had made there at first, and there Abraham called on the name of the Lord. He went back to where he was supposed to go back to, right? And lands back where he's supposed to. There was something in 12 that I wanted to, just give me a second. Oh yeah, I want to point out something that
don't
God's.
Don't
matter. She's yeah. She'll snap at you.
She's
sharp little teeth. That's a dog I'm talking about on the tape here. Yeah. Oh yeah, go ahead.
Hi Don.
There you go. That was your mama. I wanted to just mention something from Genesis 12:7, and it was an important thing to note. That God spoke to Abraham when he was in Ur of the Chaldees, and then until he finally did what he was supposed to do, and that was to get to the land of Canaan. When he landed in Canaan, it says the Lord appeared to Abraham and said, to your descendants I will give this land. And so you see that when Abraham finally came to that step of obedience in the journey, he heard God's voice again. But things had gotten awful quiet. And sometimes things get quiet when we're not doing what God has already told us to do. Sometimes we want God to speak to us and show us something, and all the while God is speaking, but we're not listening. And we expect God to guide us, but we're not getting his guidance because we're not being obedient in the thing that's in front of us. If we do not respond to the light that God has given us now, then we are not going to get new light. More light comes as we are willing to be obedient to the light that we're already given. And sometimes we're saying, God, we want this, we want you to do this, we want you to do this. And all the while, it may very well be that we're not being obedient in the thing that God's already called us to. So why should he reveal more if we're not going to respond to what he's already shown us? And so here's, God speaks to Abraham here in Ur. He goes to Haran, and he goes to, finally gets to Canaan after a long period of time. And as soon as he lands in Canaan, God speaks again. So now he's back from Egypt. I just wanted to point that out there. He's back from Egypt, and as he gets back from Egypt in Genesis 13, I hope I'm not getting confusing here. I know we're covering a lot of traveling and ground here, but I want to do an overview of Genesis, not a verse-by-verse exposition. So he comes back to worship. He comes back to the place of worship, comes back to the place of where, and calling on the name of the Lord. He did his wanderings. So then let's see what happens with Lot. Lot also, who went with Abraham, had flocks and herds and tents. Now the land was not able to support them, that they might dwell together. For their possessions were so great, they could not dwell together. So what's happening now? There was a strife between the herdsmen of Abraham's livestock and the herdsmen of Lot's livestock. And the Canaanites and the Perizzites then dwelt in the land. And the Canaanites and Perizzites would have been the descendants of, anybody remember that one? No? They were the descendants of Ham. Okay? They were the ones that were dwelling in the land. And so here's one of the sons of Shem comes into the land of Canaan. The promise is given to him that this land would be his. And Lot is with him. And Lot wasn't supposed to go with him, was he? That wasn't God's call on him. So all of a sudden, Lot, the servant, the workmen of Abraham, the workmen of Lot were against each other, because they had so much livestock, they couldn't, wherever they went, they were grazing off the land, and there was competition. So what does Abraham do? He said to Lot, "Please let there be no strife between you and me, between my herdsmen and your herdsmen, for we are brothers. Is not the whole land before you? Please separate from me. If you take the left, I will go to the right. If you go to the right, and I will go to the left." So what was happening here?
Separation.
So who was in control?
God
was. God had told him way back then, this is what I want you to do. He hadn't been obedient, but finally it was going to come to it anyway, right? It was going to happen. He was going to be separated from Lot. And that's what happens now. And once again, we see that God fulfills his plans in spite of our, what we do. God had a plan and it was going to come to pass. So what did Lot do? Lot lifted up his eyes and saw the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt as you go towards Zoar. So Lot says, ooh, he told me, I'll pick whatever way you want and I'll go the other way. Whoa, that's the best land. I'll take the best. And that's where Lot went. It says, Lot chose for himself all the plain of Jordan, and Lot journeyed east, and they separated from each other. So finally, Abraham has gotten to the place where he left his country, and he left his kindred. He finally got to that point. But it took a while, didn't it? And a little bit of sidetrack journey in the process as well. And you're going to notice something. Abraham dwelt in the land of Canaan, Lot dwelt in the cities of the plain, and pitched his tent even as far as Sodom. So Lot chose a direction where it says the men of Sodom were exceedingly wicked and sinful against the Lord. That there was not, they were not only sinful, but they were willfully sinful against the Lord. And notice now that Lot is separated from Abraham, Genesis 13:14. Somebody like to read that? Anybody have that? Genesis 13:14. What happens? As soon as Lot's gone, what happens?
After Lot had gone, the Lord said to Abram, look as far as you can see in every direction, north and south, east and west. I am giving all this land as far as you can see to you and your descendants as a permanent possession. And I'll give you so many descendants that like the dust of the earth, they cannot be counted. Go and walk through the land in every direction, for I am giving it to you. So Abraham moved his camp to Hebron, and suddenly the oak grove belonging to Mamre. Then he built another altar to the Lord.
So what happened as soon as Lot left?
God spoke.
God spoke. You see? You see how God spoke when he finally got to the land? And you see how God spoke when he finally was separated from Lot? And you see that the revelations that he was receiving, because he got a little more revelation each time. And this here is the promise of his descendants being as the dust of the earth. Now, what do we know about Abraham and Sarah up to this point? They got no babies. And God's making this incredible promise that your descendants are going to be like the dust of the earth. And so we can see that God chose a barren couple to make a promise to, that their descendants would be as the dust of the earth. So if a man could number the dust of the earth, your descendants could also be numbered. God chooses the miraculous. He chooses the impossible ones. He chooses circumstances that don't make any sense to bring to the miraculous into the picture. And praise God that he does, that he chooses people like you and me, and you know, who are we? And yet God chooses us, and he somehow causes us to be able to get from here over to there. Even though we make the rabbit trail journey, he still gets us to where we need to be, because he's faithful. And if there's anything that stands out to me when I look at the early story of Abraham here, is not so much the faithfulness of Abraham, but the faithfulness of God. And I can tell you this, that the faithfulness that you will see in people is because they've discovered the faithfulness of God. And I believe that eventually Abraham is going to be called to a great test, isn't he? If you know the story, you know that someday God's going to tell Abraham, take your only son up on a mountain and sacrifice him to me there. Now we know that God didn't allow that to go through, but he put Abraham to the ultimate test. But do you think that if Abraham had a little baby boy when he was first called from Ur of the Chaldees, and God told him, Abraham, take your only son up on that altar and sacrifice him to me there, that he would have done it? Not a chance. Why? Because he didn't know his God, and he didn't have enough faith to believe God to leave his family behind and to be obedient and go all the way to the land that God had given him. And so sometimes faith is something that it grows in us as we experience the faithfulness of God. So there is much to learn from the life of Abraham here, but the thing that I want us to see more than anything tonight as we look at this man's life is the faithfulness of God in persisting and carrying Abraham through to the place where he needed to be, so that when the test comes, when the time comes for Abraham to be faithful, that he is. But it's God's faithfulness that made him faithful. And it's God's faithfulness that will make you faithful. As you trust him, as you're willing to be obedient to him in the things that God calls you to, as he exposes to you his faithfulness, suddenly you begin to learn, my God is dependable. You discover that over the years. Hopefully, to some extent, you discovered, God has been faithful to me. Is there any sense of that in your experience as a Christian, that you have found God to be faithful?
If that didn't happen, apply to a person's life, you wouldn't believe.
That's right. That's right. You know, faith is something that God puts into us, but it doesn't. Sometimes he can cause faith to grow very quickly, but often it is the experiences that cause faith to grow. Now, there's no question, let's not belittle the fact that that Abraham had faith, at least a grain of mustard seed, because he did leave Ur of the Chaldees, right? He did respond, even though it was partial, he responded. But the Lord had to bring him forward step by step to the place where he could actually trust God. We're not done seeing Abraham's ups and downs and ins and outs here. But this great promise was given to Abraham when Lot left the scene, and that's something to consider. Now in Genesis 14:1, I'm not going to get into all the names here, but there was a war happened. And to make a long story short, it ends up that Sodom and Gomorrah, the kings of Sodom and Gomorrah, get defeated by these other kings. And they take their possessions, they take their the people, they're attacked. And if we look, let's see, in Genesis 14:10, it says, "Now the valley of Siddim was full of asphalt pits, and the kings of Sodom and Gomorrah fled. Some fell there, and the remained fled to the mountains. And they took all the goods of Sodom and Gomorrah and all their provisions and went their way." These two cities that were down on the plains. And remember, this was a very wealthy city. Remember? That's what Lot looked at. Well, that's where all the wealth is. That's where I'm going. So Lot chose wealth and wickedness. Right? He chose the wealth and the wickedness. Instead of going in any other direction, the wealth was so attractive that he didn't mind the wickedness. He was willing to tolerate the wickedness. And we find out where Lot ends up in this story. And it's not a really good ending for Lot. Lot would have been better off to stay back in Ur of the Chaldees, probably. But sad to say, that's not where he was. He was here, and he looked at the wealth, and perhaps he was influenced maybe by the very wealth of Egypt previous to that. But here he is, and he's living in Sodom. And Sodom gets attacked, and the kings come, and they take, and he's a prisoner. Because it says in Genesis 14:12, "They also took Lot, Abraham's brother's son, who dwelt in Sodom, and his goods, and departed." And so Lot is taken by these kings. Now your chances of survival, when you're, taken by kings in war, were not good. You either ended up a slave or, it wasn't good. And so it says, "One who had escaped came and told Abraham, the Jew, for he dwelt by the terebinth trees of Mamre and Amorite, the Amorite, brother of Eshcol and the brother of Aner, and they were allies with Abraham. Now when Abraham heard that his brother was taken captive," he considered him his brother, even though he was his nephew, "he armed his 318 trained servants who were born in his own house and went in pursuit as far as Dan. He divided his forces against them by night, and he and his servants attacked them and pursued them as far as Hobah, which is north of Damascus." This is quite a ways up if you look on a map where Damascus is. "So he brought back all the goods and also brought back his brother Lot and his goods, as well as the women and the people. And the king of Sodom went out to meet him at the valley of Sheba," which is the king's valley, "after his return from the defeat of Chedorlaomer and the kings who were with him. And then Melchizedek, king of Salem, brought out bread and wine, and he was the priest of God Most High. And so God, it's interesting that all of a sudden you find there's a priest of God here, someone who's a servant of the Most High God in the middle of this paganism that was all around. The Canaanites were not worshippers of the true God, but that Lord always has his people. No matter how dark the hour, no matter how hard the circumstances, God has his people. Remember when Elijah said, I'm the only one left? And what did God tell Elijah? I have 7,000 have not bowed the knee to Baal. So God always has a remnant of people. And here's a man named Melchizedek. And the interesting thing is he's mentioned in the New Testament as a man with a beginning and end of days. Now, what it means in the New Testament is not that he was never born and never died, but what it means, there's no record of his beginning or ending of days. There's no record of who this Melchizedek is. All of a sudden, he just shows on the scene, and it says he blessed Abraham of the blessed be Abraham of God Most High, possessor of heaven and earth, and blessed be God Most High, who has delivered your enemies into your hand, and he gave him a tithe of all. In other words, Abraham gave Melchizedek a tenth of all that he had. He worshipped God, and he said, I'm going to give you a tenth of all that I have. So the king of Sodom said to Abraham, give me the persons and take the goods for yourself. He said, look, you've rescued my people, right? That's what he did. He rescued his people, and he also took all the stuff back that had been taken from the king of Sodom. And so the king of Sodom said, look, just give me back the people, and your reward for rescuing my people, Abraham wasn't out to rescue the king of Sodom's people. He was out to rescue who? Lot. He said, but you can have all the goods. That's your reward. You can have everything, all the possessions. And that would have been a lot of possession. That would have been a lot of wealth. But what does Genesis 14, 22 and 23 say? Somebody read that.
Abram said to the king of Sodom, I raise my hand to the Lord, God Most High, possessor of heaven and earth, that I will take nothing from your tread or sandal strap, that I will not take anything that is yours, lest you should say, I have made Abram rich.
Why? Why would Abraham do that? He said, I won't take a thread from you.
I know he's wicked.
He was wicked?
Yeah.
Okay. So why wouldn't he take it?
He didn't need it.
He didn't need it? Okay.
You're saying his wealth would come from him and not from God.
You see what it said? Lest you should say, I have made Abraham rich. Where did Abraham's riches come from? From the Lord. And he wanted the Lord to get the glory. He didn't want to get the wicked king to get the credit. Right?
Yeah.
He didn't want the wicked king to get the credit. You know, it's interesting here that Abraham was careful and that he was not going to take from these wicked people to support the work of God. You know, in the New Testament, there's 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John. I believe it's 2nd John, it says there were Christians who went forth preaching and they took nothing from the Gentiles. They didn't take their support from unbelieving people. They didn't want it to be considered that the world was supporting the church, was supporting the work of God. They wanted to show that they wanted it to be God. So Abraham was not going to lean on the king of Sodom. He was not going to lean on anything else but anyone but the Lord to make him rich, to look after him, to prosper him. So he says this, I will take nothing from a thread to a sandal strap. I think in the old King James, I'll take nothing but a shoe latchet. I will not even take a shoe latchet from you. Lest you should say, I made Abraham rich. And then he says, except the young man who have eaten the portion of men that went with me, let them take their portion. That's up to the individuals that chose to go with me. You can do what you want with them. But as far as I'm concerned, I'm not taking anything from you. There is a difference, a separation between the righteous and the wicked. And Abraham knew that. And sometimes we need to know that too, in how we go about things. We don't depend on the world to do the Lord's work. So, we're not going to get through the whole life of Abraham tonight. Maybe one more look in Genesis 15 for a few moments. And here's the word of the Lord comes to Abraham again. After these things, the word of the Lord came to Abraham in a vision, saying, "Don't be afraid, Abraham. I am your shield and your exceedingly great reward." Why would God say that? After these things.
What was that? Why would he say what?
What he said in Genesis 15:1.
After what things?
What things did we just read about?
Having taken the people back.
Yeah. So why did the Lord say that? I'm your shield and your exceedingly great reward.
Well, the Lord will look after him. The reward.
That's right. Abraham turned down incredible wealth, right? And the Lord said, "Don't worry, Abraham. I am your reward. I'm your reward. I'm the real reward here." And you know, sometimes we need to think that way. We need to think the most treasures, the most important treasure is the Lord himself. He is our exceedingly great reward. Not the riches of this world. Not the temporary things that we are so easily can get distracted by. And you know, you might say, well, Abraham had all kinds of money anyway. Why would he want any more? But you go find a man who has lots of money. And what do they want more than anything else? More money. You know, I've watched that Dragon's Den for a while on the internet, and these guys are obscenely rich, but they always want more, right? It's never satisfied. There's never as, okay, I've had enough. I got enough money. I don't need to make any more money. It's not that way. It's more. You've got to have more. You must have more. But Abraham wasn't in that frame of mind. And the Lord says, I am your exceedingly great reward. Do we think of him as a Lord as being the great reward, or are other things, you know, crowding in and seeming as if they are as important as the Lord? There's something to be said here. Oh, Lord, be my exceedingly great reward. But Abraham has something to say to the Lord by now, because he had heard a great promise that out of him was going to come all these children. And at this point, what about Abraham and Sarah? No babies yet. And they're getting up in years. Abraham said, "Lord God, what will you give me, seeing I go childless?" In other words, where's the reward? You know, I don't have a baby. And I want to be able to pass on to the generations that you've promised, but I don't have one. And the heir of my house is Eliezer of Damascus. So he had a servant whose name was Eliezer, and he said, since I don't have any children, I'm going to give everything to Eliezer. He's going to be the heir of my house. Then Abraham said, "Look, you've given me no offspring. Indeed, one born in my house is my heir." In other words, my servant is going to be my heir. And behold, the word of the Lord came to him, saying, "This one shall not be your heir, but one who will come from your own body shall be your heir." And he brought him outside and said, "Look now toward heaven and count the stars if you're able to number them." And he said to him, "So shall your descendants be." Now, previously he said, "Go and look at the sand and count the grains of the sand." That's how big it's going to be. You better pass me that over. I thought I plugged this one in, but I guess I hadn't. Samantha's our techie tonight. Thank you. So he says, count the numbers of the sand. That's how big, how much you go. Now he says, go look at the stars. You can see the Lord is being very expressive here, isn't he? He's saying, look at the sand and look at the stars. That's how numberless they're going to be. Look down toward heaven. Count the stars if you're able to number them. And he said, so shall your descendants be. And what does it say in Genesis 15:6?
He believed
in the Lord, and he counted it to him for righteousness. This is a statement that's used in the New Testament to affirm that the just shall live by faith. That faith is the proper response, and he believed in the Lord. And then he said to him, "I am the Lord who brought you out of Ur of the Chaldeans to give you this land to inherit it." You notice he didn't say, "Abraham, good job. You brought yourself here." He says, "I brought you out of there of the Chaldees to give you this land to inherit it." And he said, "Lord God, how shall I know that I will inherit it?" And so then we have a strange affair here. especially if you're not used to sacrifice, but we find an arrangement of sacrifice made, and this was often when a covenant was going to be made between two groups of people. What they would do is they would have these sacrifices, and then they would come down the middle of them and make a covenant based on blood sacrifice. And that was like sometimes a pact or would be made between two groups of people by putting a royal sacrifice here, royal sacrifice here, and then they would come down the middle and they would make that covenant between them. And it was a blood sacrifice. It was kind of like the old blood oaths that you know, pierce the blood, mix it together kind of thing. Only this was not the human blood, but the sacrifice. And that's what he did here. Bring me a three-year-old heifer, a three-year-old female goat, three-year-old ram, and a turtle dove, and a young pigeon. And he brought all these to him and cut them down the middle and placed each piece opposite the other. Did not cut the birds in two. When the vultures came down the carcasses, Abraham drove them away. When the sun was going down, a deep sleep fell upon Abraham. And behold, horror and great darkness fell upon him. And he said to Abraham, now, in this case, we don't see... What we see is God's making a covenant with Abraham. Abraham makes the sacrifices, but it's not between this group and this group. Now it's between him and the Lord, and Abraham makes a covenant. And there's despair out of it as well as hope. He said to Abraham, "No, certainly, your descendants will be strangers in a land that is not theirs, and will serve them, and they will afflict them for 400 years." So now we have a prophecy given of Abraham's descendants. And they're going to serve in a land for 400 years. Anybody know where that land was going to be?
Egypt.
And that's eventually where Moses was called to take them back out of Egypt. And also the nation whom I will judge. That's the time of Moses, right? When the plagues came on Egypt. Afterwards they will come out with great possessions. Now as for you, you shall go to your fathers in peace and be buried at a good old age. But in the fourth generation it shall return here, for the iniquity of the Amorites is not yet complete. And that is what he says here, the judgment that's going to fall on the Amorite people, that's in the land of Canaan, is not complete yet. It hasn't come yet. And that would come at the time when they would come to drive them out of the land because of their wickedness. And it came to pass when the sun went down, it was dark, behold, there appeared a smoking oven and a burning torch that passed between those pieces. That's what they would do, go between. So now this representing the Lord passing between those pieces. On the same day, the Lord made a covenant with Abraham, saying, "To your descendants I have given this land, from the river of Egypt to the great river, the river Euphrates, the Kenites, the Kenzites, the Kenizzites, the Kadmonites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, the Rephaim, the Amorites, the Canaanites, and the Girgashites, and the Jebusites." And these were all descendants of Ham, who were living in that land, practicing great wickedness, and he said, the day is going to come when their wickedness is come to its full fruition and the judgment will fall. Now, it fell on Sodom and Gomorrah, but that was only two cities, and the cities in the plains, a few of the other cities in the plains, but eventually there was going to be a judgment on all of these here nations because they practiced wickedness, exceeding great wickedness, and continued to do so. And so that's what God, we see that in Genesis 15, that God says, "Okay, Abraham, I'm making a covenant with you. This is the way things are going to happen." And, of course, we know that things happened exactly that way. So I think it's as far as we'll go tonight. As we look at the life of Abraham, we can see that Abraham was a man of faith, but he was also a man of failure. But it was... The faithfulness of God that brought Abraham through to where he needed to go. And it's going to be the same for you and me. It's the faithfulness of God that carries us. But it is a good idea for us to respond to the Lord now. If we respond to the Lord now in obedience, we're going to save ourselves a lot of heartache and a lot of trouble down the road. So, any comments or questions?